This is a HeadGum Original.
Knee deep in the hoopla. What does it mean? What does knee deep in the hoopla mean?
What does that phrase mean? Is that a phrase we're going to hear in this
knee
song?
Knee deep in the hoopla. This is not just a lyric in the song, but this is a lyric in the song that someone decided was so good and so important that when they were choosing the name of the album, they said, you know what? We could title this album We Built the City, but no, we're titling this album Knee Deep in the Hoopla.
Because they surely were. They really were knee deep in all that hoopla of marketing and distribution, putting out an album, choosing album cover design.
Yeah, so many aspersions have been cast upon this song. And I feel like so many of the defenses put up against those aspersions are like, look, it was the 1980s. There's a lot of cocaine. Grace Slick was sober. Grace Slick is on the record as having a sober 1980s.
So you're saying that those defenses of the album, which that's not even really a defense. That's a disclaimer. Just everybody's high. The 80s is chaos. The 80s is pure chaos. Therefore, you have to accept it. You have to like the really tall hair, the poofs made with hairspray. You have to like the day glow outfits. You have to like this music because people were nuts.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, people say music like this just had to happen because of cocaine, but really it's just because Grace Slick wanted to have a number one hit.
And she did it.
Let's punch it.
It's a Thursday, and that means there's another episode of this show, Punch Up the Jam. It's the show where we listen to the greatest songs of all time, we talk about them, and then by the end of the show, me and Evan make an even better version of them, a punched-up version.
And this song is definitely one of the greatest songs of all time, as measured empirically by chart performance and replay value on oldies radio.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say the most important test for any song is when it comes on your car stereo, do you reach out and turn the volume knob up or down?
Right.
And
this
for
song's
me,
an upper, yeah.
This one is an upper. If this comes on my radio, I'm reaching out to the knob and turning it up. A lot of people in recent years, in the last 20 years, a lot of people have claimed this is the worst song of all time.
Come on.
And those people
this
are
song?
Those people are dumb. Those people are wrong. Those people are out there writing clickbait articles is what I will say. And also, I think it's just become kind of like a meme. It hit like one or two lists of bad songs in the early 2000s. And then by the time Rolling Stone came out with like their top 10 worst songs of all time, as voted by fans, as voted by readers of Rolling Stone, this song won in like a landslide. Rolling Stone was like, we've never had a winner of any poll by this wide a margin. And it's just because at that point, the meme of like, that song sucks has gathered so much momentum that Rolling Stone cannot stop the avalanche.
The same way that if they conducted the poll today, it would probably be like all between All Star and Never Gonna Give You Up or something. Just meme songs.
Never Gonna Give You Up was on the top 10 list.
At that time. Which
at
was
that time,
what?
In 2011. But what I'll say is what's telling about that top 10 list is, of course, it's not a list of the worst songs ever. Of course, Never Gonna Give You Up isn't one of the worst songs of all time.
You'd never know what the worst song of all time is because it was written in somebody's basement and consigned to obscurity.
Yeah, they tried to get a record deal and they couldn't because their song was bad. Another song that was on the top 10 worst song list of all time, great song. Don't Worry, Be Happy. That's a really nice song. But what do all three of those songs have in common? Overplayed.
Overplayed.
They just got overplayed, and people that liked them when they first came on the radio turned against them.
Mm-hmm. They wore out their welcome, and then it became fashionable to say, I'm too cool for this now.
Yes, exactly. And even the members of the band have kind of like talked out of both sides of their mouth on this one a lot. Like in the 80s.
You mean like Levon Helm? Member of the
No,
and Rick Danko and Robbie Robertson.
No, not like those members of the band. Like the members of Starship. And this is very confusing even what band did this song. I don't want to talk about it too long at length. Well, it's not confusing because there was a legal court case about it. So we know exactly what band did it.
You know what else is confusing?
What?
Who are the hosts of this podcast? I'm Evan Gregory, one of your hosts. Musicologist and songwriter.
We cold open for too long. It finally happened. The cold open was too long. I'm Andrew Gregory. I'm one of Evan's brothers. We're best known for making a series called Autotune the News on YouTube, but we're the relatively new hosts of this podcast.
Not
and today
new.
We're talking about not Jefferson Airplane, not Jefferson Starship, but Starship's number one hit single, We Built the City on Rock and Roll.
Andrew, you know what else you are?
I don't.
To me?
No. What am I to you?
You're the man now, dog.
Let's get into it. I'm crazy excited about this. I interviewed someone close to me today in preparation for talking about this song, and I said, do you love this song? I sang the first line. They said, yes, I love this song. I said, do you know what it's about? They said, no. I said, do you know what city it's about? They said, no. They guessed Detroit.
Okay.
Wrong.
Yeah.
This song's not about Detroit. Everyone loves this song because the first line is such a hook, such a jam. And then the rest of the song is kind of lame and no one remembers it.
Well, but they do a really smart thing is that first part, that good part, they repeat it over and over again. They come back to that.
That's a tried and true trick. Yeah. Repeat the one part. So this song is ripe for punching up.
Because there's very good parts and very bad parts, but also you turn the radio up when it comes on.
Yes, it passes the knob turning test. Everyone does that. You hear that opening lick.
We built this city.
It completely slaps. You touch that knob, you give it a twiddle.
And it just sounds like the future. Even now, in 2022, this song, they tried to make it sound like the future. It does sound like the future.
Mm-hmm.
You think of a beautiful futuristic city that's built not of concrete and steel, but of just the pure tones of Grace Slick's and Mickey Thomas's voices.
Yeah, the architecture of the city is actually built on musical notes and guitar riffs and good vibes.
Yeah, now, the problem with the song is when you listen to it is unfortunately not what it's about, is building like a glass city from huge guitars.
It's not about constructing like a futuristic. I'm picturing like, you know, the city in The Fifth Element where the buildings are like a mile tall. There's hover cars, flying cars.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Everyone's wearing like neon suits with huge shoulder pads and stuff.
No,
that's a rock and roll city.
It's a little confusing because if you listen to the finished song, first of all.
I don't want to listen to the finished song, but I have to because it's my podcast.
Exactly. But Jefferson Airplane becomes Jefferson Starship, becomes Starship after a lawsuit. They're like the ultimate San Francisco psychedelic band.
Walk us back for the noobs.
Okay.
Walk us back through that complicated sentence that you just dropped on us.
So there's a state called California.
Okay, I heard of that.
In the state of California, there's a city,
mm-hmm.
and it's called San Francisco.
Okay, also heard of it.
Yeah, people who are from San Francisco might say that's Northern California. People who live in Northern California are like, no way. That's still Southern California. We're going to secede. Anyway.
Yeah, I remember. San Francisco is the one with clam chowder.
They have the Golden Gate Bridge. They have...
Fog.
They have fog.
They have fog.
Yes.
And they talk like this. Y'all want some gumbo when you come over to San Francisco?
Do you want me to tell you about the history of San Francisco or not? Because some people might not know about San Francisco and you are really confusing them. Because that all the stuff you're saying isn't true, and all the stuff I'm saying is true, and I want people to know that.
This is a great dynamic. I'm going to try to get more on the truth train here. Continue with your exposition.
So San Francisco, 1960s, counterculture.
Mm.
You know, you've got the hippies, you've got the flower children, you've got psychedelic rock, and like the peak of that psychedelic rock is the band Jefferson Airplane.
Okay.
They did White Rabbit.
It's a major jam session by the end of the song. It's like really rocking, psychedelic.
Yeah, it starts with that really iconic bass line, and it's just Grace Slick, the lead singer, comes in, and she's like, one will make you a daughter, and one will make you a daughter.
It's kind of spooky. It's a little bit threatening. And it's about shrooms or something.
Probably.
Like, it's kind of an Alice in Wonderland thing,
it's like
that, on the White Rabbit. You're following the White Rabbit by taking shrooms, and by the end of it, you're rocking out.
Yeah, it's kind of like a veiled song about drugs, barely veiled, while also talking about the White Rabbit from Alice in Wonderland. They have like an iconic performance at Woodstock, you know, Don't You Want Somebody to Love? That's one of their tunes.
Yep.
But then like in the 70s, they start making all these like science fiction albums as like solo projects.
Okay.
Grace Slick is married to the other singer and guitarist for a while. They're making these sci-fi records that are getting nominated for Hugo Awards, which is weird then. It's weird now.
That's the science fiction literary prize.
It'd be weird if someone put out a music album and the Hugo Awards now were like, we're giving you a literary prize or nominating you for a literary prize.
Any literary prize for a song.
Yeah.
Is, you know, that's a curveball.
But the lineup is just constantly changing. Jefferson's Starship has like approaching 30 different members. And in the early 80s, Grace Slick's partner.
So that was a purposeful pivot. They changed their name to Starship because they had become a futurist colony. They've become a future, like a Polyphonic Spree type vibe.
It's partially because they were singing so much about the future, and it's also partially because two of the main members of Jefferson Airplane left. Jorma Kaukonen and Jack Cassidy left to make the band Hot Tuna in the 70s, and they were like, well, now we're kind of a new thing.
Okay.
And they took all the musicians from the solo albums and turned it into Jefferson Starship.
Yeah, okay, a rebrand.
Yes. Weirdly, I one time watched a Hot Tuna concert at 8:30 in the morning in a college class.
Hmm.
I don't know why, but they came and performed at Swarthmore College at 8:30 in the morning. How do you get rock stars to show up to play class at 8:30 in the morning? I'm not sure.
Blowjobs.
But the professor did it.
Oh, God.
Honestly, I think it's even more transactional, which is that the college professor was married to a billionaire who funded Hot Tuna's rock and roll concerts. So he can kind of say, hey, do you want me to fund that next tour or not? The class is at 8:30, guys. Get there. I wasn't even in the class, but I went to watch Hot Tuna play.
It was a financial blowjob.
They were great. So there's just a wild number of Jefferson Starship members. And then the founder of Jefferson Airplane and Jefferson Starship, Paul Kantner, leaves. He quits. And he's so mad that they're still using the name, he sues them, and they have to become just Starship. And it's at that moment that Grace Slick basically tells everyone she's working with, I'm too old for this. I'm too old for this shit. I want to quit. But if I'm going to quit first, now I, Grace Slick, approaching 50 years old, I'm going to need a couple radio hits, guys. And somehow they pull it off. Somehow it happens. When this becomes a number one hit, Grace Slick becomes the oldest woman to ever have a number one hit on the Billboard chart.
At the time of this record's release?
Yes.
So the timeline now spans 20 years. When Jefferson Airplane starts in like peak ground zero hippie shit in San Francisco.
Yes.
Then they turn into 70s sci-fi stuff and change their name.
Yeah, kind of prog rocky. Kind of like surfing the prog rock wave.
They get a little proggy. Then they have to drop the Jefferson bit because their former members piss. So now they're just Starship.
Yeah.
At this point, 20 years has passed. Grace Slick is like the one continuing member of the band. Other than that, there's like a crowd of hangers-on just playing saxophone in the back row.
Yeah, I'm not sure there are any other original members at this point. And honestly, I don't think Grace Slick even counts as an original member because I think she came in on the second album. So it's like this wildly rotating crew of folks.
Like the U.S. Congress.
Yes, I was thinking more like Menudo.
Like Menudo.
It's like Menudo. And the other thing that kind of blew my mind about realizing that Grace Slick is, I think she's 46 or 47 when this song comes out. I think of this song as being the ultimate boomer anthem, and I think of Jefferson Airplane as being like the ultimate boomer band. But to realize that Grace Slick was 46 or 47 in the mid-80s, I realized this is not a boomer. This is a lady who's born in the 1930s.
She's pre-boomer.
She's pre-boomer. She's born in the 1930s, and she has a song about living in the future in the mid-1980s that just skyrockets to number one. Everybody loves it. Everyone agrees it's a great song. It's written by Bernie Taupin, of all people.
The guy that writes the songs for Elton John?
Exactly. The lyricist for Elton John writes this, and he wanted to write this super dark, like, post-Elton John song. He was tired of working with Elton John. He loved it when it came out. Of course, 20 years later, he's talking about how much he hates it, but he loved it when it came out.
But how is the Tiny Dancer guy even connected to Starship at all?
I think just living in California, right? He's probably hanging out in California. From his perspective, it is a song about L.A. starting to suck. He's
what?
Like, in the 60s and 70s, L.A. was cool. There were places to go see rock and roll, and now there's no place we can rock anymore. L.A.'s dead. And when Starship records it, because they have such the imprimatur of being a San Francisco band, they kind of change it a little bit to be about San Francisco, but really it's about L.A., and according to this song, rock and roll is dead. And it sucks that rock and roll is dead, even though this song is built like entirely on synthesizers.
Wow. I just always assumed that this song is aspirational, futuristic, looking forward, saying like this is we built a city together on rock and roll, sort of metaphorical about like we built music together. But you're telling me that this song is actually just a get off my lawn
yes!
grumbling song
yes!
about we used to have fun doing rock stuff and now disco is here and it sucks.
Yeah, this is a like boomer anthem saying like, no, the music now isn't as good as our music was, but it's hitting like 10 years before boomers became like that because Grace Slick is 10 years older than boomers.
So she has what we would now consider a boomer attitude at the time towards those young 20 and 30 something boomers. That's complex.
Yeah,
that's complex. Let's start decoding.
We built this city.
Woo! I'm pausing it because the song should be over. The song should be over right now. That part, those four bars, just complete bop, tight harmonies, and memorable hook, man. It's unforgettable hook. We built this city. The song should stop right there. It should be a 6-second song.
That's a terrible idea.
That's my first punch up pitch. My first one, not always my best, but just put it in your back pocket because it should be considered. Okay. Now, let's continue our.
This city. We built this city on rock and roll.
Oh, that big gated reverb on the snare.
The massive snare reverb, the classic synth. You don't know me. I don't recognize your face.
Say you don't care who goes to that kind of place.
I don't care.
Knee deep in the hoopla.
There it is.
Yeah, living in the
knee deep in the hoopla, baby.
Can you decode that for me? What is knee deep in the hoopla?
I don't know. What I don't know is it good or bad to be knee-deep in the hoopla? I think my gut reaction is like, oh, that must be bad to be knee-deep in the hoopla. Like, that sucks. But I think maybe it's good. Like, man, we were really knee-deep in the hoopla going to all those rock and roll clubs. That was cool.
Mm-hmm. Say you don't know me. Oh, recognize my face. What are they saying? They're saying, like, we used to be big around here, but now you young kids that are going out to the clubs, you wouldn't even recognize me.
Yeah, I'm 46 years old. My name is Grace Slick.
Surely there's another continuing member. That's not her singing that part, is it?
No, it's a guy named Mickey Thomas. And Mickey Thomas came in the late 70s when Grace Slick quit. Grace Slick left the band. They hired Mickey Thomas. Then Grace Slick came back and they just kept Mickey Thomas in.
I love it. You know what? I support it. Take your time off. Get a new member in the band. Take your PTO, but keep the brand going. The band is a brand. Keep it going. Why does it have to be the same jerks in there for 20 years straight?
And that was such like, even when they were doing more countercultural stuff in the 70s, like they tried, when they first changed the name from Jefferson Airplane to Jefferson Starship, I think they were just going to name it to Starship, but their manager was like, we really got to keep the Jefferson in for branding. Like, it's like this whole band and this whole song just kind of like oozes branding in a way that is negative to me. But I'll just say it again and again. Like, it worked. They pulled it off. Grace Slick said, I won a number one hit at age 46, and it was. And then it led to like a streak of number one hits. Like she kept breaking her own record of who is the oldest person who's the oldest woman to have a number one hit?
Just by stopping being hippie countercultural people and deciding, making a conscious decision, we're just going to go mercenary and try to predict what is going to top the pop charts.
Yeah, talk about hippie stuff. I mean, talk about visualizing your goals. You just say to your producer, hey, I want a number one hit on this album. And then you have one?
I don't know. I'm coming around to their side now because that's way easier said than done. You can't just say you want a number one hit and then do it. You got to have the secret formula.
Yeah, they should. I mean, could they have had different lyrics for every other part of the song other than We Built the City on Rock and Roll? Yes. Was the song a number one hit? Yes.
Just goes to show you, you just need the one memorable riff.
Yes. But
imagine if Facebook had just had one intermediary step where they called themselves Metaface, and then like Sean Parker sued them and said, like, I thought of the face, you got to take that off, and then they became Meta. That'd be like Jefferson Airplane going to Starship.
I think it would have worked. Now, Evan, this does bring me to your least favorite segment of the show.
Doggone it. Then you get $5,
$5, baby. So this is a number one hit for Starship. And Starship follows up with two more number one hits, like, basically right away. Another one off this album, another one off their following album. But I'm not going to ask you about those number one hits.
Oh, good, because I don't know them.
I'm going to ask you, Grace Slick through the 80s, the rest of the 80s,
okay,
the rest of the 90s,
okay,
holds this title
of the oldest woman
to have a number one hit
on the Billboard Hot 100.
Who takes the crown from her?
Okay.
And still holds it today.
Today?
Today.
Who took the crown from Grace Slick? Who would have been? She was in her mid-40s, to late 40s, when she's making hits in the mid to late 80s. Oh, Cher.
Got him!
Yes!
That's $5, baby!
Oh,
do
baby!
You believe in life after $5, Evan?
Oh,
that's fire!
Yeah!
I do just want to say, I think...
Your career,
oh, baby!
You know, just me being open to life.
Doug! Congratulations on a fine performance. What do you call that?
I do strongly believe that karmically, this was tied to, right before I came to record, I watched a video on YouTube. My jaw is on the floor of Grace Slick's last performance with Jefferson Starship. She retired from, like, she literally had these three number one hits, and then she was like, I said I wanted hits so I could retire. Now I'm retiring. I'm not going to do music anymore. She's like on the record as being like, I was too old for rock and roll music. You shouldn't do rock if you're old. It's a young people's game.
Mm-hmm.
She had one last performance with Jefferson Starship after 9/11. She was like, 9/11 happened. The world needs Grace Slick. And what did she decide to do?
They've been waiting.
She decided to, I swear to God, walk onto stage in a burqa and then rip it off to reveal Grace Slick.
Whoa.
Wearing an American flag.
What a statement.
How's that for counterculture?
Yeah, we built this city on jingoism.
Woo! I mean, this is the band that's like the peak of counterculture in the 1960s. They ride the synthesizer wave into the 1980s. If Grace Slick had just written a song that jingoistic in 2001... it would have been another number one hit, October 2001, I'm telling you.
Yeah, the country was ripe.
Oh, man, it's just as racist as hell.
Too many runaways. Are they cracking on homeless people? Marconi plays the mamba to the radio.
I love that line.
Don't you remember?
That's it. A lot of cool syncopations in this song.
Yeah.
A lot of cool offbeats.
Because it rocks, man. That's how you do rock and roll.
Look at that driving bass with the syncopated synth. I love it.
What do you call this synth? Really recognizable. That sick bass line that just sounds familiar, that synth sound. Sounds really familiar because that is the same patch used on a ton of other 80s hits. For example, Highway to the Danger Zone comes to mind. That's the exact same. And that particular sound was really common because, oh, they thought when Yamaha made the DX7, they it was like a boundary-pushing brand-new synthesizer. They thought people were going to be dialing in their specific sounds. Of course, some people did that. But what is the sound that's really recognizable? Like this bass line and the Kenny Loggins tune? Oh, the default patch.
Oh, right. Well, but don't you think that's like, that's one of the reasons why this song in people's mind is so overplayed? It's like when we talked about in one of our first episodes, the synthesizer that Paul McCartney was playing on Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time. It's like one of the first songs you can hear that synthesizer on. Mm, so like when that song comes out, people are like, what an amazing sound. Yeah. This song comes out, people are like, this song rules and the sound that they got, like, where did they even get that? Mm-hmm. And then it's such a hit, it's on everything for 5 years, and people are like, that sound, oh, I'm so tired of that. But the only reason that it was so used is because the song is such a hit.
Mm. The penalty for being a pioneer.
Now, I do want to point out that Mickey Thomas has confessed, I would not have caught this, but Mickey Thomas, the singer himself, has confessed there's a little funky thing here in the lyrics, which is, what is a mamba, Evan?
What is a mamba?
Yeah, what's a mamba? In the context of the song, you blow by it.
You know, yeah, great point. I blew by it.
I've blown by this
Marconi,
my whole life.
Inventor of the radio, right? Yes. There. This is
Italian inventor.
This is representing the radio. Your radio is playing the mamba. And I'm like, I'm thinking, oh, a type of Latin dance. But what am I thinking? No. I'm thinking of the mambo a la West Side Story. But you have drawn my attention to the fact that this lyric is...
He's playing a snake.
Marconi's playing the mamba.
And Mickey Thomas has basically admitted, like, yeah, we screwed up, and I tried to change it in live performances to mambo, but it was just, people knew mamba. It was harder to sing. I just went back to mamba. But there's, like I talked about that there's a lot of double talk about the song from, you go back and read interviews with Bernie Taupin in the 80s, and he's like, we created an incredible song. And then you read interviews with him in the 2000s. He's like, I always hated that song.
Sure he did.
It's like now you read interviews with people that they're like, yes, the Marconi playing the mamba. It's because the radio was like a snake going across all of Italy. A lot of double talk about this song.
I did that on purpose. Because the radio is like a snake.
I also want to say that Bernie Taupin has talked so much smack about this song, and he's really tried to push a lot of the blame onto the producer, this guy named Paul Wolf, who's credited as one of the writers who played all the keyboards on it.
Okay.
And Bernie Taupin had this amazing quote. There's this really amazing GQ article that's like a quote-unquote oral history of the making of the worst song of all time. And the article kind of acknowledges, like, yeah, the worst song of all time thing is overblown, but it's great clickbait. I clicked on it. Mm-hmm. So, and there's all these great quotes from the main players over the years, and you like see their attitudes changing. And Bernie Taupin has this quote where he's like, if you heard the original demo, like, it was amazing. You wouldn't even recognize the original song, but Paul Wolf just ruined it. He changed it. He was Austrian. Like, he didn't speak English well. And just a couple minutes ago, I was like, huh, like, I wonder if I can find that original demo. I wonder if I can find it.
Oh, no, you
found
it.
Just spin it up for 1 second, Evan.
The original demo.
It's the original demo by a guy named Martin Page. He's the guy who Bernie Taupin gave the lyrics to make the first demo.
Here it is.
Bernie Taupin, this is pretty similar, man. I can recognize the song as we build this.
This is the original demo?
It's a little different, sure. But this is, I can recognize the song, Bernie Taupin. This is not that different.
No, it's not that different.
Bernie Taupin has built this myth of like, these other guys took my song.
It sounds significantly worse because they have a couple of these synths in the treble range are detuned too far. They sound like they're not in the right key.
Yeah, in my opinion, when you listen to those like weird harmonies in the synth,
yeah,
I just can't help but think this synth is kind of knee-deep in the hoopla. Go back to the good one. Go back to the good version. I'm tired of this.
Okay, where did we stop?
Marconi's playing the... He's playing a snake.
He's playing the marker.
He's sending
the
telegraph
snake
all over the world. I think we're on the second verse.
Which is...
Corporation games.
Oh, those corporations. I do hate them. That's also true. Someone stole the
the stage.
We just want to dance.
Oh, what could be? What could be an easier songwriting crutch? You know who we hate? The man. You know who we hate? Pardon me while I call the chief executive of this label and try to gin up a number one hit so I can retire in middle age.
It's so cynical that Grace Slick is like, ooh, I need a bad guy in the song. Oh, that counterculture thing worked for me.
Should I name a specific?
I need a number one hit.
Should I name a specific corporation? Perhaps
Coca-Cola Games.
Ooh, General Electric.
You run that by the legal counsel of your label. Oh, and you're
Grace.
Grace, we can't do Coca-Cola Games.
Grace, it's me, Bob. What if we just changed it to corporation? Nobody likes corporations. Not even the stockholders.
Who cares? They're always changing corporation names.
What problem do corporations have with rock clubs? Maybe the rock clubs just went out of vogue. Are you to have me to believe that in the 1980s, Los Angeles does not have a thriving music scene, Bernie Taupin?
No!
I mean, maybe it ain't Elton John playing at the Troubadour or Dodger Stadium, but
Starship is mad that they've been upended by Hall & Oates.
Yeah, disco is happening, rap is happening, and you're telling me the clubs are gone?
What?
It's just the clubs you went to are gone.
We just want to dance here.
I just can't dance to this rap music.
Oh, no.
Yeah, back on the snake.
The pre-chorus, you gotta hear it every time. Are you playing the mamba?
That's the pre-chorus, is playing the mamba.
I don't know, after I heard it a second time, it starts to feel sexual.
That ain't no throwaway verse line. They put that in the pre-chorus.
Yeah.
I'm worried that maybe this is a sexual thing and Marconi's cranking it.
Sending a snake all over Italy.
Mm-hmm.
I think this guitar solo kind of is.
Yeah, I like that. They kind of just shook up the feel for just a moment. They didn't go full 60s or 70s guitar rock guitar solo for an entire stanza. They just took a few bars, sent the drums into halftime. Instead of the driving.
And then they're riding that wave into the bridge where the bridge is suddenly less packed with lyrics. It's kind of like the front half of each phrase has lyrics, and then they're kind of given a little space for the first time in the song.
Let me back it up. I'm going to back it up just a couple seconds. Let's check that out.
It's just another Sunday in a tired old street. Police have got the chokehold.
Nothing happens in L.A. anymore.
Now the cops are getting in on it.
Okay, we can agree the L.A. police probably not cool in the 80s. More than that, we can agree the L.A. cops in the 80s are bad.
Strongly agree, and yet I think they've undermined their own anti-cop position by just mentioning faceless corporations earlier.
Is this an anti-cop song or an anti-corporation song? Let's get it straight.
Or a conspiracy Starship. Theory song where the corporations own the cops. Even worse.
Counts the money.
Probably a corporate CFO.
Used to be a cool local guy. Now it's those corporations playing their games.
Who rides the wrecking ball into our guitars? Does that mean they're knocking down the club?
The corporations are bringing their wrecking balls in to smash the guitars.
Okay, sorry. Unpack that one for me. I think the last verse lyric we get before we launch into the final chorus is looking for America coming through your schools. What did the schools have to do with this city of rock and roll?
I assume in a kind of like science fiction dystopia way, they're finding any kid who likes rock and roll music and sending them to a special training school to teach them how to like music that isn't rock and roll.
Yeah, the corporations own the schools? Maybe?
I don't know.
And are brainwashing
man.
The kids?
I don't know.
Oh, this is in dire need of a punch-up. We're wading through a sea of lyrics here that are, I don't know, I just feel like they're phoning it in here going with crutches. trying to buy our loyalty by saying corporations suck. And you know what else sucks? Cops, schools.
There's the boomer wire things changing away from rock and roll thing. There's the cops thing. There's the corporations thing.
Yeah, you young kids, for you forgot about rock and roll.
Yeah.
You forgot about rock and roll. Now you're on to you bunch of yuppies. You're day trading. You probably love Ronald Reagan.
But this song is being sung by yuppies. They're people in the 80s who just are desperate for a hit. They just want to retire.
I'm seeing that we have some time left on this song. I have no idea what is left to transpire.
Well, what is about to happen is so symbolic of the very doublespeak we're talking about, of people being like, why are corporations taking over while pushing desperately for number one hit? Just press the play button. I don't know if you'll remember this part or not, Evan. After it happens, I'll explain what is so hilarious about it.
Golden Gate Bridge on another gorgeous sunny Saturday. I'm seeing that bumper-to-bumper traffic.
Don't you remember? So we got the radio voice.
I forgot about the radio voice.
Comes back in here.
Your favorite radio city, the city by the bay, the city that rocks, the city that never sleeps.
There he goes again. Marconi yanking his crank.
First, there's a weird thing about this that helped make this his number one hit, which is they delivered two major radio markets a version of the song without the radio voice in it. And then the local radio DJ would put in his own thing. Like,
it's a roasting morning here in Houston. There's going to be a rocket launch later today.
And then the people of Houston would feel like, this is our song. Where, like, the normal version of it is the San Francisco version. But what is so cynical about this and so hypocritical is in this anti-corporation song, the person doing this voiceover is the head of
the one we just listened to?
Yes.
This is the version that you would buy on the single.
Yes. It is the head of programming for MTV. Just like, what corporation is driving more record sales than any in the 80s? Like MTV. And just because of like a personal connection, like, we've known each other for so long. We've been in the music business together. Just through like sheer nepotism. He comes into the studio, records that. Then the next thing you know, maybe I'll put your little video on my TV station. It's called MTV.
Oh.
Next thing you know, it's a big hit. What a coincidence.
Someone's always playing corporation games, Grace Slick?
Yeah.
The reason is you!
You don't like those corporation games until you're playing the corporation games all the way to the top of the chutes and the ladders.
Oh, wow. That's a great piece of history. A great little piece of hypocritical history.
And in like an amazingly smarmy, yet pretty funny way, after this hits number one, the head of programming, his name is Les Garland, sent them a telegram and was like, congratulations on backing me on my number one hit.
Sending them a message through the medium of Marconi.
No. Like, he's putting it on MTV just so he can send them that telegram to troll them, right?
Right. But as the head of programming, no one is more in the driver's seat to make this a number one hit.
Yes. He's like, you know that great music video where Abraham Lincoln, the statue on the National Mall, stands up and starts singing about how the city was built on rock and roll? Let's put that one on 3 times an hour.
Oh, man. Boy, okay. Thanks for that sickening detail.
The good part. We're just riding this to the end, man.
Now, no one can hate this hook. If I can forget everything else that happened in this song, everything about the intent of the song, the history of the song, how it was released, what the verses are about, their attitude, if I can forget all of that and just live in this hook, I love it. I love my life. I'm turning the volume knob up. It passes the test.
Those wailing improv from Grace Slick. Now, would... Oh, the drum fill.
Yes.
Would our listeners revolt? You pitched at the beginning of the song, Evan, a 6-second version.
Yeah.
What if you just had a song that was equally long? How long is this? 4 or 5 minutes long? It's kind of a long song.
Yeah, five-minute song.
What if it was 5 minutes of just the chorus? Just 5 minutes straight of...
And
we
built
this city on rock and roll.
We just heard a super shreddy ad-lib guitar solo to close. That's a great way to go out on a fade-out. You could intersperse that with, we built this city, and then
killer ad libs and guitar solos, yeah, you could do that for five minutes. I'd be pretty happy.
I don't know if I'm going to do it this week because I'm just so cracked up about the corporation games and Grace Slick's and Bernie Taupin's boomer attitudes. I should have looked up when Bernie Taupin was born, but it's probably before. I wonder, is he a boomer? Is Bernie Taupin a boomer, or is he pre-boomer?
I don't know. If he was writing for Elton John, he could be a boomer, but something about his name to me says he's born in the 1890s.
Bernie Taupin.
Yeah. It's like he's a character in Oliver Twist.
Something about him says that he's either an Oliver Twist or he was involved in the Teapot Dome scandal. So I really want to lean into
It's me, man. I'm writing this about it. I'm leaning into the futurism. Now it's we built this city on rock and roll. And you literally did build it on musical notes and you're taking off on starships.
I want so bad to do the 5-minute chorus. And I want to promise our listeners that someday we will find that song with the perfect chorus and the most miserable verses that we just make a full-length chorus version.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a little out of your control, Evan, because this is...
I'm giving it to you.
...one of our world-famous paternity leave episodes.
We're banking it, baby.
We're tracking this in April. It's going to come out later. While I'm just lying around with a baby, relaxing, changing diapers. That classic paternity leave stuff.
Yeah, hopefully the time this comes out. You're knee-deep in baby shit.
But I'm going to knock out the punch-up. I got to go boomer. I just got to talk about the boomer stuff. And I'm calling my shot. That's what it's going to be about.
Okay. Let's take a little break, and then we'll come back with a hot, hot Andrew punch.
Oh, behave.
Is this the worst song ever? Definitely not. But it is kind of like the Forrest Gump of songs, in that it's like, created in a lab for baby boomers to like. It works. Baby boomers love it. It wins all of the awards possible. In the case of Forrest Gump, the Academy Awards. In the case of We Built This City, it's a number one hit. But then, like, as time passes and you look back at Forrest Gump, you're like, was that the best movie that year? Pulp Fiction came out that year.
Or were they just pandering by doing a review of all the things that happened to boomers?
There's a scene in Forrest Gump where he wipes his face with a shirt because his face is muddy, and then his shirt has a smiley face on it, and that's how the smiley face was invented. That's dumb. It's not the worst movie ever made, but was it properly rated in 1994?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was skewed.
No.
It was skewed by boomer aesthetics.
Yeah, nor was We Built the City properly rated in 1987, nor now, when it's considered the worst movie of all time.
It's been skewed by boomer aesthetics.
Doesn't make sense.
An episode featuring an Andrew punch is just always the most dreamy for me. I sit over here on my tuchus, and I just wait to roast you.
Really?
But you, so far, every time have knocked it out of the park. I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, you know, I called my shot. I told you that I was going to make this song the ultimate boomer anthem. And so I have composed for you a song about the core tenets of boomerism. And honestly, I just think you're going to love it.
Okay, let's take a listen. Here is We Built This City, punched.
We feel so shitty. We feel so shitty. We feel so shitty.
Oh, you could stop it here. It's already perfect. You could stop.
The assonance just was right there. It was just waiting. Waiting. Old, raw, shitty, city.
That new building used to be this really cool place. You probably wouldn't know about it. You moved here too late.
We were here when it was cool.
Music simply was the best. The Beatles and Led Zeppelin was the farthest our society's progressed. There used to be one type of music playing on the radio. We feel so shitty that we got old. Feel so shitty.
Woo!
We feel so shitty
Oh, it's true, and it absolutely slaps. We feel so shitty that we got. This is so useful. You can play this all the time. The generational warfare.
Someone's always playing music that's not classic rock.
Yeah, quit it.
Who cares about these new musics? Disco and rock and roll, it was for dancing. Had this groovy beat. But Michael Jackson and Whitney, they don't make me.
How do you dance to Michael Jackson?
How do you dance to Michael Jackson?
I can't move my feet.
You can't dance to that stuff.
I just want to point out, it's subtle, but I did change from a Mickey Thomas to a Grace Slick impression between verse one and verse two.
Very subtle.
Hope you noticed that.
Very subtle.
Very breathy, Grace Slick.
And you cut the snake out. No more snake. No more snake stuff. We feel so shitty that we got old. We feel so
shitty. We feel so shitty that we got old. Oh, this is a timeless hook, man.
Okay, you kept this in. Smart.
Another Saturday night.
Okay.
Movie on my love seat. Nobody invitation. Why did the clubs close exactly on the date? Coincidentally identical to when my mortgage originated. Why must time pass?
Hey, I have expenses here.
Ooh, the baby boomers, they simply didn't happen to other demographic groups.
Life was like a box of chocolate.
What?
You never know what you're going to hear. We feel so shitty. You want a chocolate?
Gump is in the Gump is in the answer. I love you. Snuck in a little. We got the fire. We didn't. We you snuck in a little. We didn't start the fire here.
Oh, I'm kind of on an adrenaline high, man. That was so good. That was so. My hat off. Just you could hang the whole thing on that hook. Timeless stuff. We feel so shitty that we got old. Anyone could play that to shame their own dad. Complaining about the kids these days.
The cross song rhyme, just like I said, it was just right there when I looked hard enough.
Wow.
Old, roll, city, shitty. I might have dropped the fade at the end too hard because we miss. I'm not sure people will hear all the vamps of boomer stuff there at the end. Hot Lips, the character from MASH. G. Gordon Liddy is in there.
Yeah, you don't know about that if you're not a boomer.
Yeah, no, yeah, I don't know who G. Gordon Liddy is. I know that my parents know who G. Gordon Liddy is. I know that if you said the name G. Gordon Liddy to my father or mother, they would be able to tell you the specific role he played in Watergate. I think he's a Watergate guy.
Must be.
But I'm not sure. He could be a Reagan guy.
With a name like Gordon in the middle name Gordon?
I know my parents do not like G. Gordon Liddy for political reasons, but yeah. I'm really couldn't tell you what he did.
Yeah, he's up there with H.R. Haldeman. you know, you got to fade it out, make it a little tough to hear, get those repeat listens, you know, save a little nuggetry, some Easter eggs for the fans that are going back again and again. Man, that was a juicy one.
Yeah.
You're going to want that one at the top of your dad playlist. You're going to want to rename this one in your iTunes library to like Aardvark or something so that it shows up first. You're going to need this one.
001 Aardvark.
You're going to need this one handy at Thanksgiving.
I just tried to get to the heart of it, that like this song is coming out at a moment that Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston are at their peak, and yet Grace Slick and Bernie Taupin and Starship are like, what happened to music?
No, what happened to music?
What happened to music?
Oh, it sucks.
There's no music anymore in Los Angeles.
You can't find any music anymore in Los Angeles.
So yeah, just tried to dive into the heart of their boomer minds, their boomer hearts, and their boomer souls.
And you did it. I am blissed out after listening to this track. This song is punched up. This song has been punched.
Yeah, I'm on an adrenaline high, but there is like kind of a undercurrent to it that I also feel like I just shat on the baby boomers too hard. Did I go too hard on the baby boomers? My parents, God bless them, are boomers. I love them. I love a lot of boomers. And you know what? Everybody gets old. Everybody feels like, hey, I went to that cool place. You didn't go to that cool place, but I did. And you know what? A whole generation of people dragging this song and saying it's the worst song ever is really just an extended way of dragging the baby boomers. Sorry, boomers. Every week we end the podcast with a little palate cleanser, a little falling action called...
What is your walk-in in music?
What's your walk-in music?
My walk-in music I came up with as a way to cleanse my mind from thinking about futuristic cities built on rock and roll. And this is a tune that is, it is from the 60s. This is an older song that makes me think of running barefoot through the meadows. That is what it depicts. This tune is by The Free Design, and it's called Kites Are Fun.
No way.
Yes.
Flying kites.
Is this...
This song is real.
Is this,
think
a,
this is a
new
pretend
band?
Song?
Is this a new band that's trying to sound like a band from the 60s? Or is this a real band from
Wait,
the
60s? Wait, hold up. Just listen. When the beat drops, listen to these vocal harmonies. Right here.
Daddy.
This is not a new band trying to sound 60s.
This is a real 60s band.
This is a real 60s family band. I think it's a bunch of siblings.
No. This song is so good. It's so pure. And it reminds me of everything I love about boomers. Bless their hearts. Running around, being free people in the 60s, changing the world, flying kites, not saying in the 80s, man, where'd kites go? Kites were so cool, no one flies kites anymore. They just let the trend or fad pass without bitching about it.
Great point. This is the positive side of boomer energy. Thank you, Free Design. Strongly recommend this song, Free Design, Kites Are Fun.
Is that the band that did I Found Love in the Spring?
Yes.
I found love in the spring. Oh, that song's so good.
Yeah. Get into the Free Design, guys.
Oh, wow. I always thought it was a new fake band. You know, like you go into a hamburger restaurant in New York and people are like, wow, this place must have been old, like around forever. And you just have that like keen design eye where you're like, no. Yeah. This place opened in the last 2 years. And they spent like $100,000 finding like an orange wood panel that looks like it's from 1975.
Have you heard of this band from the 60s called Belle and Sebastian? Okay, what'd you bring in?
Okay, my walk-in song is a vengeance song. It's kind of a vengeance rebuttal song. When you hear it, that might not make sense. So I'm going to do a little bit of explaining here. I'll do it while the song's playing. I'm walking, but
okay,
I'm going to be walking. I'm walking into my bedroom. Mm-hmm. For a beautiful night of sleep.
Ooh.
Of sleeping through the night.
Oh, this is our first classical submission.
Listening to Chopin's Nocturne. How do I read the numbers of it? I don't even know. I know this nocturne.
Yep. Opus 9 is Chopin's collection
of nocturnes, and this is nocturne number 2 in E flat major.
That's why we keep the music majors knocking around, ladies and gentlemen. The reason this is a vengeance song, even though it sounds very relaxing, we talked about how this is a paternity leave episode for me. It's playing after I'm on paternity leave. We're recording before I'm on paternity leave. It's maddening to me. There's kind of only one response that people have when you tell them you're about to have a kid, and that's, hope you're getting some sleep. Mm-hmm. Hope you're catching up on your sleep. And I'm not. It's a very stressful time. I'm about to have a kid. It's not like you're relaxed right before you have a kid. There's some other stressors happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, it's like, well, if I slept 8 hours every night for a week, which I'm not really doing already, and then I didn't sleep for 3 nights, you don't get to bank sleep. I can't sleep for 10 hours a night now and save it up for later. I can't catch up on my sleep. That doesn't exist.
Yeah, you can run a deficit on your sleep, but you can't run a surplus.
Yes, but tonight, when I walk into Chopin's Nocturne, number 2, I'm going to have a great night of sleep and will be caught up on my sleep as vengeance to those people who asked me, caught up on your sleep? I tell them I'm about to have a newborn child.
Are you telling me this is a lullaby for yourself?
Yeah, it is. You know, we've talked a lot about boomers this episode, Evan, and I've tried to backpedal, just like Bernie Taupin once did, about whether We Built the City's a good song or not.
Yeah, we went way over our quota of the number of times, yes, using the word boomer.
And I now have an opportunity to backpedal on my boomer bashing,
mm-hmm,
by noting I think of our mother when I listen to the song. This is one of her go-to songs to play on the piano. Our mom's a boomer. I love it when she plays this song.
The song itself, decidedly not boomer. This is some real 19th century stuff.
But it's already a very sentimental, romantic song. So you can only imagine the sentiment I feel when I think of my mother playing on the piano. That's some real... who's that guy? Who's the French guy who remembers stuff? You know.
Le Pedomain?
You know, no, not Le Pedomain, the guy who farts. You know, the guy who remembers stuff. They ripped off a Ratatouille? with the cookies. The French guy with the cookies.
Napoleon Bonaparte?
No.
Chef Boyardee.
Yes, it's Chef Boyardee. He's the French guy with the cookies who remembers things in a sentimental fashion in literature.
Gerard Depardieu.
Yes, it's Gerard Depardieu. He smells the cookies and he flashes back to his childhood. And similarly, when I listen to this Chopin Nocturne, it's just a very sentimental experience for me. But I hope it puts me to sleep tonight. I'm going to try it.
Great pick. You'll be walking into your own bedroom to Chopin's Nocturne Opus 9, number 2, in E-flat major on Dante. What a way to go out of this rockin' episode, this truly rockin' episode.
Honestly, I'm feeling kind of sleepy. This is going to work. I hardly slept last night. I'm going to sleep great tonight just thinking about this song.
If you're listening on your commute, wake up!
Thank you so much for listening to Punch Up the Jam. If you want this week's Punch Up, you can get it, as always, at patreon.com/GregoryBrothers.
Obviously, we're months away, but you're going to want to have this at the ready when you go to your next Thanksgiving dinner, and you need to punish someone.
Yeah, and we'll work on a punch-up that apologizes to boomers and tells them that even though they might overrate their music or overrate the movie Forrest Gump, that you still love them deep in your heart.
You can follow Punch Up the Jam on Twitter and Instagram at Punch Up the Jam. It's just the name of the podcast. And you'll get sneak peeks of the episodes and all sorts of treats. But of course, the biggest treat of all is the Punch Ups themselves, which are on patreon.com/GregoryBrothers. It's the best deal on the internet. Do yourself a favor. You can follow me at GetSomeEvan.
And you can follow me at AroseGregory.
We'll see you next week when we'll be back to jam punching. Is it too gauche to say we built this podcast on rock and roll?
Should have done that for the punch. Why didn't I think of that?
It's limiting us by genre.
Should have done it for the punch. I wouldn't have to spend all that time apologizing to boomers.
We don't just do classic rock. We also do 90s
You've
hits.
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
God damn it, Marcel Proust.
Proust?
Proust?
That was a HeadGum Original.